Good evening, everybody. Malloy here on the Mike Malloy program. Thanks very much for tuning in. Boy, what a fun day. As most people listen to talk radio know, Glenn Beck has hundreds and hundreds of listeners. And I received 43 emails from his listeners, and you can imagine what they said, because I had the temerity to suggest that since Glenn Beck has suicide rampant in his family, that he may want to, if he gets to the point where he feels suicidal, because it's obvious this guy is having a complete break from reality, that he should do it on television, on his TV program. And it would be one of the hottest YouTube videos out there. And, I still say that. Abso-goddamn-lutely. Are you kidding me? Beck is a Nazi. Beck is what he is. And here's why I know that eventually he's going to kill himself. He's insane. I want to play something for you. All I ask is when he offs himself that he would do on TV, so he can catch the visuals, like when he clenched his fist and said he wanted to strangle Michael Moore because Michael Moore dared to make the film Sicko. But before we get to that, I want to play something for you to show you why I'm convinced Glenn Beck is insane.
Kathy, go ahead.
Hi, Cap. Yeah, that's right, Glenn. I think you better pick your head up and put it back on your shoulders, because it's rolling all over the ground right now.
Yes.
We've got people out there that are really sick that do need health care.
Oh,
and
my
when
goodness.
People like you turn around and subject people to this kind of rhetoric that don't have insurance because they can't afford it and they've been laid off.
I know.
Where do they get it?
Where do they get it?
Your family, let me tell you something, Glenn.
Yes.
Obviously, nobody in your family has had an illness that they couldn't get.
My family has never, ever had an illness. You're right. And anybody, you know what, Kathy, you are so right.
No.
That they couldn't pay for it. Let me just tell you something. You are right. I read in the story all the time about the people who are dying on the streets because they can't go to a hospital and get health care. You're exactly right. We are letting people die left and right in this country.
Afford anymore.
Oh, we can't afford anymore. So you must, of course, be
going broke.
Oh, they can't afford it. Right, you're right. And that's why the country can afford it. The country can afford it. Don't worry about that going broke. Don't worry about that.
Only industrial country in this world.
In this world.
That doesn't have health care. What the hell is
And we are the only country in the world where leaders come from every other country to get health care when they can't get the right kind of health care in their own country. We have presidents. We have prime ministers. We have speakers of the parliament in Australia that can't get the prostate treatment and have to come to this country to get it. So you're right. You're right. We should adapt all of those things. And Canada has a great health care. That's why people are suing. That's why in Canada they have a lottery. They have a lottery system. Who gets to go see a doctor this month in Canada? Go ahead.
How about the Netherlands, Glenn?
How about the Netherlands?
Yeah, how about France and Italy, where you just go in and sign a paper?
You're right.
And the doctors
you
don't have to fight with the insurance companies.
Tell me, Kathy, about the insurance program that they do have in France. Tell me about it.
There are people that go over there, and they are on vacation. If they have a problem, all they have to do is walk into the clinics or the hospitals and sign their name. The doctors do not have to be bothered signing insurance forms.
So in other words, a person... Hang on, I want to make sure I understand. So a non-citizen can go over to a hospital and walk in and get emergency treatment. That never happens here.
I'm asking you a logical question. And
I'm giving you a logical answer.
You don't have logic.
You're right.
What is your logic? What would you do? I'm asking you, what would you do to change this health care system for the better? After all, every time you people bring up costs, you don't care about the trillions of dollars to bail out the banks and all the credit card companies.
Kathy, get off my phone! Get off my phone, you little pinhead! I don't care! You people don't care about the trillions I'm going to lose my mind today.
Yeah. Yeah. Now do you understand? The man is nuts. There is no question. And his listeners, out of his hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of listeners, the 30 or 40 that wrote to me today are equally deranged. Beck is a typical right-wing coward, as are his followers. And like all tyrants on the right, suicide is always an option for these bugs to avoid accountability for their sick actions. Like Hitler and his upper rank of killers, it's always an option for them. Always. Beck is like a little girl in a schoolyard. A 6-year-old. Who wants to bully all the other little girls. He's a whiner. He's a brown shirt. He's a crybaby. He's sick out of his goddamn mind. Just like his emailers. And I must tell you, some of the emails that came in today are just classic from the right brown shirt tactics. It was almost like my little email system was being teabagged. It was. I've saved some of the better ones and deleted a lot of them. I have a computer system that rejects the ones that are a little bit too crazy. They give me a tummy ache. Now, with all the foul derail about me saying if Beck ever kills himself, I hope he does it on television so people can watch. Let's listen to Beck threaten a man's life.
I'm thinking about killing Michael Moore, and I'm wondering if I could kill him myself or if I would need to hire somebody to do that.
Ah, really?
I think I could. I think he could be looking me in the eye, you know, and I could just be choking the life out. Is this wrong? I stopped wearing my What Would Jesus Band Do, and I've lost the all sense of right and wrong now. I used to be able to say, yeah, I'd kill Michael Moore, and then I'd see the little band, What Would Jesus Do? And then I'd realize, oh, he wouldn't kill Michael Moore. At least it wouldn't choke him to death, and, you know.
Well, I'm not sure. Isn't that nice? Isn't it? Here's some more Beck quotes from May 17th, 2005, the Glenn Beck Radio Show. He said it took him about a year to start hating the 9/11 victims' families. He called the Katrina victims who were stranded and drowning scumbags. He called the father of Nick Berg, a civilian executed in Iraq, a scumbag. Called Cindy Sheehan a tragedy slut. Said there was no bigger waste of skin than Jimmy Carter. Echoed Limbaugh's hope that Obama failed, adding later, of course, that Obama's a racist. This piece of human waste, are you kidding me? So to you little twits who just pushed your intelligence level to the wall today to try to put together a coherent email to me, nice try. Stay in goose step, lockstep with your sick leader. But Glenn Beck, like so many right-wing neo-Nazis, will experience what so many right-wing neo-Nazis have and will experience. And you know it, and I know it. So we will be playing for you periodically tonight his threat to kill Michael Moore. His threat to kill. So let me repeat it. Glenn, suicide runs in your family. Your whole family is a bunch of screwballs. If you ever decide to kill yourself, pal, please don't do it on the radio show. Do it on television. We'll be back after the break.
Oh, for a liberal helping of truth? It's More Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. This is just sent to me from Daily Kos under breaking news. From Tampa, angry protesters and strong supporters are clashing inside and all around a health care reform town hall meeting downtown Tampa. The meeting, which was scheduled to begin at 6 p.m. at the Children's Board of Hillsborough County, drew hundreds of people who quickly began to overwhelm staff and event organizers at the front entrance. As the building filled to capacity, angry protesters stuck outside began to scream, yell, and chant. At one point, those trying to get inside began banging on windows as Tampa police officers quickly spread out, guarding all the entrances. There were at least two scuffles between protesters trying to enter and organizers manning the doors. One of those involved in a scuffle, Randy Arthur of Oldsmar, said he was injured by those manning the doors and said he would file a police report. A minority of the crowd, perhaps a third, were healthcare reform advocates, some associated with the local Democratic Party or the staffs of Castor or Betty Reid, and some with Organizing for America, an organization that grew out of the Obama campaign. After her short talk, Castor left about 6:45, sparking much of the rest of the crowd to leave as well. Some jeered Castor as she left. And then Glenn Beck is the one doing this. Let me see, where is it here? Yeah, this is Beck. Oh, after her short talk, Castor left. As she left, Karen Jeroke, a Tampa homemaker and organizer for the 912 project set up by Rightist TV commentator Glenn Beck, started screaming, "They're hiding from their constituents. She works for us and needs to listen." As noted above, back to Daily Kos, Glenn Beck appears to be collecting these protesters. This is getting ugly fast. Someone needs to calm these folks down. This would be strike three for Glenn Beck now. He calls the President of the United States a racist. He threatens Pelosi live on the air, and then his organizers do this at a town hall. Let's play the Pelosi bit here real quick. Go ahead.
I wonder what it would be like. Seriously. I mean, if I could go, you know, to the speaker's shindig, wouldn't that be great? What would it... Oh, look, here she, oh, she is, wow, you're so much prettier and flatter and shinier in the face than I expected. It's almost like you're two people at once. So, Speaker Pelosi, I just wanted to, you gonna drink your wine? Are you blind? Do those eyes not work? There you go. I want you to drink it now. Drink it. Drink it. Drink it. I really just wanted to thank you for having me over here to wine country, you know, to be invited. I thought I had to be a major Democratic donor, a longtime friend of yours, which I'm not. By the way, I put poison in your... No, I look forward to all the policy discussions that we're supposed to have, you know, on health care, energy reform, and the economy. Hey, is that Sean Penn over there? I know it cost me more than $30,000.
All right, that's enough. This squirrely son of a bitch. Email here from one of our listeners. I'm not going to mention your name. Beck is too big a coward to kill himself in the bunker as the tanks approach. He'll come out crying, screaming, and begging right up until the time he soaks up a burst of 20-millimeter rounds. This guy really is a psychopath. He's a psychopath. It's just unbelievable. This is what I'm talking about, folks. I mean, come on. He is so nuts that he is. I mean, suicide runs in his family. This is a diseased family, all of them. And the time will come when this, I just hope that Beck does not turn out to be one of the real sociopaths who picks up a gun and goes to an aerobics class. And opens fire, killing people, and then kills himself. And then we can read about it on his blogs. I hope that's not the case. Look, Glenn, just off your... If you're going to do it, I'm certainly not suggesting you do. My goodness, I would never suggest that. But you have made it clear that you're capable. You've made it clear that you are eaten up with madness and insanity. Don't wait until you're buried in the bunker and then pull the trigger after all the damage you're doing. You know about crazy people. You know about crazy people better than the pig man ever would. Sean Hannity and Bill O'Reilly are sitting over there at Fox just eating their own feet because you are so destructive. Way beyond what they're capable of doing. They're wimps. But you, Glenn, you are the real thing. You are out of your goddamn mind. Please don't kill other people. Don't take your gun and go shoot other people, Glenn. Don't do that. If you decide to go on a rampage, go to your basement and take care of it there. Oh, my God. I just do not understand why someone like this has access to the public airwaves. I don't get it. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy.
Have you seen the little piggies crawling in the dirt? And for all the little piggies, life is getting worse. Always having dirt to play around in.
Six before the hour, I will not be on the air tomorrow night. It'll be a rebroadcast. So tonight we're doing podcast trivia. So we're going to open the lines right now. And if you want to call in and take your best shot, I shouldn't say that around Glenn Beck. Take your best shot at answering one of our podcast trivia questions. If you get it right, you win a free 1-year subscription to The Malloy Show. The downloads, the commercial free podcast. Somebody said, well, they're not commercial free. A couple of weeks ago, I was doing some live reads about, GM. You know, it took all of 15 seconds. Oh my God. Those are called billboards. Commercials are a little bit different. So anyway, the number here is 877-996-2556 if you would like to play podcast trivia. While you're dialing in, we are going to,
I'm thinking about killing Michael.
We're going to play Glenn Beck again in his death threat to Michael Moore.
I'm thinking about killing Michael Moore. And I'm wondering if I could kill him myself or if I would need to hire somebody to do it. I think I could. I think he could be looking me in the eye.
Woo!
You know, and I could just be choking the life out. Is this wrong? I stopped wearing my What Would Jesus Band Do, and I've lost the whole sense of right and wrong now. I used to be able to say, yeah, I'd kill Michael Moore, and then I'd see the little band, What Would Jesus Do? And then I'd realize, oh, he wouldn't kill Michael Moore. At least he wouldn't choke him to death, and, you know.
Oh, my God.
I'm not sure.
Oh, my God. And you Beck animals think that you know, my hoping that when he does commit suicide, we can all see it. Oh, Jesus. All right, now what's this? Boy, they're all over the place now. This is from another one from Daily Kos. Representative John Dingell, Democrat in Michigan, town hall meeting, Romulus, Michigan, this evening. There were so many people that the MC from the AARP said they will have two town hall meetings. The Dingell supporters outnumbered, needless to say, the meeting should have been held in a mental institution with Dingell supporters outnumbered by a minimum of 5-1. There's a long line to get in the meeting. They're holding up signs of Obama looking like Hitler. Once again, inspired by Glenn Beck. Dingell is in his 80s, you know. When Dingell tried to answer any question, he was interrupted by people screaming, liar, the government's going to kill us when we're older, the government is providing abortion money. In the audience were the Liberty Council, Republicans, Libertarians, Teabaggers, LaRoucheites, anti-abortion activists, and a handful of Dingell's... Oh, there's a picture of one of these sons of bitches with his mouth wide open. It's unbelievable. Glenn Beck needs to go into the basement of the bunker and perhaps, if he chooses to, do the honorable thing, wouldn't you think? Oh, and the other thing, Sybil Edmonds, FBI whistleblower, is ready to break her gag order unless she gets another order from the Obama Department of Justice invoking the state secrets privilege. We'll have Brad Friedman is going to join us at the top of the next hour to give us an update on this. It's just an incredibly weird story. Anyway, Beck, you know, Beck sits in the sewer of his little studio. He's such a coward himself and provokes people to go out and do this kind of stuff. It's happening tonight. And you evil little turds had the audacity to send me an email. Keep them coming, Beck bullies. I love it. Well, you know it's going to happen, don't you? Of course. Kelly is calling from Durham, North Carolina. Hi, Kelly.
Hey.
It's time once again to play podcast trivia. Are you ready?
Yes.
Okay. You know how this works. I will ask you a question, and they give you four possible answers.
Yeah.
And if you pick the right one, you win a podcast. You ready?
Yes.
Okay. What did President Bush describe as our number one priority in September 2001? And then 4 months later said it's not that important and not our priority. Was it A, pursuing Middle East peace, B, eliminating the deficit, C, capturing Osama bin Laden, or D, capturing Enron chairman Ken Lay?
I would have to say C.
C, capturing Osama bin Laden. That's the right answer. You win. All right. Way to go. All right. Was that too easy?
It was medium.
All right. All right. Let me put you on hold.
Okay.
And Kelly and Kathy will get the pertinent information. All right. We're going to do this again. If you're on hold to play, Kelly just eliminated your chance because he won. So if you're on hold to play, we'll do it again at the bottom of the next hour. This Sybil Edmonds story. This is at Brad Friedman's website, bradblog.com. A former agency translator called to testify in Ohio election case this Saturday. Unless the Department of Justice reinvokes their twice-invoked state secrets privilege claim in order to once again gag former FBI translator turned whistleblower Sybil Edmonds, her attorneys have notified the department by hand-delivered sworn letter of declaration this week that she intends to give a deposition open to the media in response to a subpoena this Saturday in Washington, D.C. Edmonds has confirmed her intentions to answer any questions asked of her during the sworn proceedings, fully and publicly, during conversations with the Brad blog this week. She notes that her agreement with her former employer, the FBI, who fired her illegally after she filed whistleblower allegations about corruption and foreign infiltration in the linguistics department. The FBI, her agreement with the FBI includes certain nondisclosure requirements. However, those requirements do not preclude her answering to a legally issued court subpoena. The subpoena and request for sworn deposition is part of a case now pending before the Ohio Elections Commission. Yada, yada, yada. We'll have more on this when Brad Friedman joins us at the top of the top of the hour. All right. It's getting curiouser and curiouser, isn't it? I hate to think what would happen if I went to a town hall meeting about health insurance reform and was confronted by these turkeys. I really do. I pretty much know what would happen. Trust me. I think we're this is time to maybe. I think what I'm going to do here is, do we have Uncle Mike's Story Corner music available? If we do, let's go ahead and play it, because I got this. This is from Stephen Pizzo, and writing at newsforreal.com. It's entitled, I Was There at the Birth. From Uncle Mike's Story Corner. Stephen Pizzo. I was there at the birth. I was there when it began. The ugliness, the ever so thinly veiled racism, the attacks on the press. It was August 1992. The place, the Houston Astrodome. The occasion, the Republican nominating convention. First, some special data. The press gallery inside the enormous dome was to the right of the podium, about 15 feet above the convention floor. Animosity toward the working press was apparent from the moment I stepped inside. Many of the delegates were sporting large lapel buttons that read, "The press lies!" and "Media, be fair!" The conservative campaign against the media had moved from whining to in-your-face insult. Reporter access to the convention floor was tightly controlled. We were not allowed to simply roam among the delegates at will. Instead, we had to ask permission from a Republican gatekeeper before leaving the press gallery. First, we had to make an appointment. The reason given was that they did not want too many reporters on the floor at once, so they only let a few go at one time. Even then, we were on a short leash, 20 minutes, and we had to be back in our appointed place, like library books. On the floor were squads of young men and women, many in their teens, dressed in red, white, and blue straw hats, red vests, white shirts, and black pants. I assumed they were some kind of Republican youth group, the kids of Republican officials, or both. To say they were squeaky clean-cut would be an understatement. They looked like they'd just been bussed in from the Salt Lake City Mormon Temple. I only mention this because of what those clean-cut kids were up to. After each particularly fiery speech from the podium, they would march en masse to the foot of the press gallery wall and begin chanting, "Be fair! Be fair! Be fair!" American reporters laughed it off as a childish bit of political theater. Our European colleagues were not laughing. They looked worried, especially those from Germany, Austria, and France. Every day at 2 p.m., the DNC, the Democratic National Committee, would hold their own news conference at a local restaurant two blocks away from the Astrodome to rebut what was being said at the convention. The restaurant's banquet room was just big enough to hold the 40 or so reporters who showed up each day to hear the Democrat side of the story. Future Clinton Commerce Secretary Ron Brown and longtime Clinton friend Betsy White were the daily presenters. One more stage-setting point. The room had ceiling-to-floor windows facing the street. More from Uncle Mike's Story Corner when we come back.
Mr. Nice Guy. Here's Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour, back to Uncle Mike's Story Corner. Stephen Pizzo, I was there at the birth. He's at the Houston Astrodome, August 1992, the occasion of the Republican nominating convention. And every day at 2 p.m., the DNC would hold their own news conference at a local restaurant two blocks away from the Astrodome to rebut the insanity that was going on at the convention. Now back to Stephen. Each day, just as Ron Brown or Betsy White would begin the remarks, those squeaky clean young Republicans in their Yankee Doodle Dandy suits would crowd the sidewalk outside and begin chanting. Then they'd start pounding on the windows, not hard enough to break them, just hard enough to make it difficult to hear what was being said, which, of course, was the point, just as it is now at the healthcare town hall meetings. The next day, I was on the convention floor, my time carriage about to turn into a pumpkin, when I spotted my old friend, Congressman Jim Leach, Republican of Iowa. He's standing in the aisle outside his state's delegation. The Iowa delegation had been hijacked by Christian right activists, and in their opinion, Jim just wasn't conservative enough to deserve a seat. I was shocked. Jim Leach was exactly the kind of politician every American should want in Washington, regardless of party. He was smart as a whip and entirely sane. And, of course, therein lay the rub for those taking over his party. Back in the Astrodome and back in my nest above the convention floor, the time arrived for Marilyn Quayle's turn to speak, wife of then-VP Dan Quayle. She launched into a fiery anti-feminist diatribe, and the crowd roared. Seated next to me was a young woman reporter from the Scottish newspaper, The Scotsman. She dutifully took notes until Ms. Quayle began bad-mouthing mothers who, quote, choose careers over family, end quote. The young Scottish reporter rose to her feet, muttering, "Oh, for Christ's sakes, give me an effing break," and stormed off. Things were getting tense. I got a permission slip for the floor just as Pat Buchanan began his speech. It was the first shot in what would become known as the culture war. The crowd clearly would have preferred him over the guy who was actually going to get nominated. They roared their approval to every one of Buchanan's now disturbingly familiar xenophobic, homophobic, racist thrusts. I could feel the energy level on the floor hit a kind of psychic red line. And that's when I saw them, scattered through the crowd, not a majority, but more than a few, right arm raised, hand flat, palm down, the Nazi salute. There was no mistake. There was no mistaking it for anything but what it was. And I saw no one try to stop them. I heard no one admonish them. At that point, I'd already spent 2 days interviewing delegates sporting their "The Press Lies" buttons. Some were polite, though it never seemed to dawn on them that the big-ass button staring me in the face was an insult. Others were decidedly rude. "Why should I talk to you? You'll just twist what I say or lie about it." I might have pointed out that in all my years of reporting, I've never once written anything that wasn't true and verified as such, or that if I had, I would have been sued, which I never was, and fired, ditto. But they would have brushed that aside as lies, too, so why bother? By the way, this was long before these same folks had their own media outlet, Fox News, staffed by reporters who actually do a remarkably carefree and casual relationship with the truth. The last day of the convention was the finale. Ronald Reagan spoke. He was, well, he was Reagan. There he was, the pseudo-folksy mannerisms, the sugar-coated nostrums, his sideways nod of the head that functioned much as Sarah Palin's wink. By that time, I had reached the same point my Scottish colleague had a day earlier. I'd had enough. I gathered my papers and walked out in the middle of the speech. The conventioners' roars of approval following me deep into the parking lot. Over the years that followed, I was not surprised to see the seeds of hatred, paranoia, xenophobia, and racism cultivated and nurtured by those empowered by that convention. Tom DeLay, Newt Gingrich, Michelle Bachmann, Dick Cheney, George Bush, Karl Rove, Sarah Palin, and the rest. So when I see clips of GOP brown shirts disrupting town hall meetings, I figure among them might be just some of those squeaky clean Republican youth that serenaded me and other working reporters with the ironic chant, "Be fair, be fair." Because had we been truly fair back then, maybe the nation would have been forewarned and forearmed. But we, the media, were not fair. We pulled our punches. We were too timid to tell the truth about everything we saw, we heard, and we knew about what was happening inside the Republican Party. Had we reported all that, they would have accused us of being unfair. The media knew that and blinked. We put on our blinders and let it go unreported because we wanted to be seen as being fair. And the media learned nothing since, because if it had, it would be reporting not just that groups of conservatives were disrupting town hall meetings, but exactly who was orchestrating those fake grassroots protests. But if you want to learn about that, you can't turn on CNN or NBC or CBS or ABC. You have to turn to comics, Jon Stewart, Stephen Colbert, or activist news shows like MSNBC's Countdown and Rachel Maddow. Kudos to them. But they are too easily dismissed as bias. The decline of civil discord and honest political discord declined steadily after that 1992 convention. And unless the regular working press starts doing their jobs, it's headed further south, which is a terrifying prospect. So please, media, be fair. For real this time. Another episode of Uncle Mike's Story Corner, brought to you by your friends at Madness Incorporated, the CEO, Glenn Beck. God. So here we are, and like I said a couple of nights ago, at some point, Truth Seeker, you and I are going to have to choose, aren't we? How we are going to respond to the continuing destruction of this republic. I know how I'm going to respond. All right, when we come back after this break, we're going to be joined by Brad Friedman, who will have an update for us on the Sybil Edmonds saga. And by that, you know what I mean. So stick around for that. And at the bottom of the next hour, another round of podcast trivia, so you can win a 1-year subscription to podcast downloads of The Malloy Show. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. 6:30 past the hour. This is The Malloy Show. Our military affairs correspondent writes in about Pat Buchanan and that speech he gave in 1992 at the Republican National Convention. Sharon writes, I remember what Molly Ivan said about Pat Buchanan's speech at the Republican Convention that year. Quote, it probably sounded better in the original German. End quote. Yeah. Oh, Buchanan is, I don't know. You know, what are you going to say about him? What are you going to say about him? All right, one more time. For those of you who are just joining us, the Glenn Beck, we'll talk with Brad Friedman here in a second. Glenn Beck threatening to kill Michael Moore.
I'm thinking about killing Michael Moore. And I'm wondering if I could kill him myself or if I would need to hire somebody to do it. I think I could. I think he could be looking me in the eye, you know, and I could just be choking the life out. Is this wrong? I stopped wearing my What Would Jesus band do, and I've lost all sense of right and wrong now. I used to be able to say, yeah, I'd kill Michael Moore, and then I'd see the little band, What Would Jesus Do? And then I'd realize, oh, he wouldn't kill Michael Moore. At least he wouldn't choke him to death and, you know.
Well, I'm not sure. Way to go, Glenn. What a sick bastard. What a sick bastard. All right, let's move from the insane to the rational here. We're joined by Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com. Hey, Brad.
Hey, Mike. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing all right. So I get a bunch of emails from people who are sending me the link to your website about... Sybil Edmonds subpoenaed and ready to break the gag order unless the Department of Justice intercedes. Tell us what this is all about.
Yeah, it's a pretty amazing story, although let me just note that isn't it an amazing day when Pat Buchanan is the sane one in comparison to Glenn Beck?
Oh, my God.
Don't you yearn for the days of Pat Buchanan?
Well, not completely.
In any case, it's a pretty remarkable story. Since you and I spoke last, it's sort of completely unrelated, almost out of the blue from the discussion that we had the other day about Sybil's comment that the U.S. is working with Osama bin Laden right up until 9/11, as she had mentioned on your show when I was guest hosting and interviewing her.
Right.
In a completely unrelated matter, seemingly, she suddenly got subpoenaed this week from a case before the Ohio Election Commission right now. You remember Jean Schmidt, the Republican from the 2nd District of Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
She's the kind of crazy woman who called
yes.
Jack Murtha a coward, I believe it was.
Yes.
Had a very odd election, by the way, a special election 2005 against Paul Hackett when the computers went down.
Right, right.
She won. All right, well now... she ran last year against a guy named David Krikorian. He was an independent. And this year, in 2010, or coming up in 2010, he's going to run as a Democrat against her. And she has suddenly filed this complaint against him, saying that, with the Ohio Election Commission, saying that he slandered her with false statements by saying that she accepted blood money.
Mm.
From these various Turkish operatives. She is the co-chair of the Congressional Turkish Caucus. Excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
And she has been, as a bunch of other Congress members for several years, trying to keep a vote on whether this murder of a million and a half Armenians
right.
in Turkey was a genocide or not. They're still debating this 100 years later.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
And this is a damn serious issue for these folks.
Mm-hmm.
So Krikorian, who is of Armenian origin, suggests that she's, you know, taking blood money in that she's taken, I don't know, tens of thousands of dollars from these Turkish interest groups
mm-hmm.
and so forth. So,
right.
In all of this, she brings Krikorian to court. Krikorian then subpoenas Sibel Edmonds, who has been trying to get out the word about what she's been listening to, what
mm-hmm.
she was listening to, while serving as an FBI translator. She
right.
is, by the way, Turkish-born, actually.
Sibel? Oh, that's right. Yeah, she is.
She is yeah. Turkish-born, and but she is a U.S. citizen. And she's been trying to talk about exactly this now for many years and the influence that the Turkish government has. And, you know, a year or two ago when I started reporting on her story, I wasn't even aware of this.
Mm-hmm.
But having now investigated quite a bit over the years, this group, this Turkish American Council, really has its fingers, its claws into all sorts of Congress members, state and Defense Department officials, including, as she has alleged, Dennis Hastert, who apparently took hundreds of thousands of dollars from Turkish interests,
mm-hmm.
according to this expose in Vanity Fair a few years ago, related to Sibel's case. And so now she's been called in to answer questions about exactly this by the Krikorian team.
Mm-hmm.
And she has informed the Department of Justice that she is going to testify this Saturday in D.C. And while it was originally the Krikorian attorneys had announced that it would be an open deposition, in fact, the Ohio Election Commission regulations do not allow for that. So it will be a closed deposition, although she'll be able to talk to the media afterwards, as will both sets of attorneys.
Mm-hmm.
That is, if the DOJ does not intercede and once again slap a state secrets gag order on her, as they had, as the Bush administration had done twice in the past.
Can a new gag order be selective? Can they say, all right, you can answer questions about Turkish influence in American politics, but you can go no further?
Yeah, it can be selective in that the state secrets privilege, you know, is not really a law at all, and they kind of make it up as they go along. They make this claim pretty much up out of whole cloth to shut these people down when they want to, and judges
right.
seem to go along with it. So, yeah, that is one option that could happen. If the DOJ does not show up and invoke the state secrets claim again, as she has essentially dared the mm-hmm. DOJ to do in a handwritten hand-delivered letter this week to
all right, let me ask you,
yeah.
in the other direction, how far, if there is no gag order enforced by the DOJ, how far Can Sybil Edmonds go? A. B. What direction of questioning will come about when she gives this testimony?
Well, I'll tell you exactly what she was asked to testify about. There was about 5 points in an affidavit, and that has not been disclosed. However, the Krikorian team has put out 3 of the main points they plan to ask her about. They're real short. I'll read them to you. They're pretty scary.
Okay.
1, the government of Turkey had illegally infiltrated and influenced various U.S. government institutions and officials, including the Department of State, Department of Defense, and individual members of the U.S. Congress. 2, the government of Turkey had engaged in practices and policies that were inimical to American interest and had, in fact, resulted in both the direct and indirect loss of American lives.
Mm-hmm.
3, Turkish-American cultural and business groups conduct operations with direct and indirect support from the government of Turkey. Now, some of these matters have been discussed a year or so ago in the Times of London broke a story based on something we covered at Bradblog that basically detailed how these Turkish-related agents are helping to abscond with nuclear secrets from the U.S. They're going into the nuclear black market from Turkey down to Pakistan. That's how AQ Khan apparently developed the bomb. And then from there, they go to Iran and North Korea and everywhere else. And we've got top officials who are looking the other way at this. This is what she is expected to testify on. Once again, if the DOJ does not reinvoke that state secrets claim that they've used twice before, or the FBI themselves could shut her down because, or could at least try to, because of agreements she had when she was an employed as a translator at the FBI.
Brad, hold on a second. Let me put you on hold. We'll come back right after this break. Stay with us. We're talking to Brad Friedman. Go to bradblog.com if you're wondering what the hell we're talking about.
Stand back. Here come 50,000 watts of free speech. It's Mike Malone.
Yes, it is. 21 past the hour. We're talking with Brad Friedman from bradblog.com, who broke a story earlier this evening, not a whole lot earlier this evening, about FBI whistleblower Sybil Edmonds being subpoenaed and ready to break her gag order unless the Department of Justice once again tries to silence her. And Sybil Edmonds has probably enough information to really play hell with some of the people who destroyed this country over the past 8 years. All right, Brad, what's your best guess of what's going to happen?
Well, I can tell you what Sybil's best guess seems to be. She believes the DOJ is going to stop her in some fashion, either by invoking the state secrets claim, although they haven't done so far this week. But she told me that in a lot of these whistleblower cases that she's seen, they tend to come in at the last minute when it's really too late then to fight, to fight the claim. On the other hand, they don't want, she believes that the Obama administration does not want to be seen like the Bush administration. They don't want to use the state secrets privilege in the same way the Bush administration did. So they may not do it. On the other hand, that means they might, send an attorney by to be there for the questioning and basically object on a question by question basis, at which time Sybil will have a decision whether she wants to go ahead and answer that question anyway or face the potential consequences. So it's really it's anyone's guess as of now. I do know the FBI, and I'll have some more on this either late night tonight or tomorrow. I do know the FBI is attempting to block Sybil from giving any testimony here on the basis of her employment agreement.
Right.
They're supposed to go to the the director of the FBI and get permission, give 30 days notice.
But you post to your website, those employment requirements don't preclude her answering to a legally issued court subpoena.
They don't, although... they don't. I'll leave it at that for now, and I'm going to I'm speaking with some of the attorneys and getting some information from the FBI. So hopefully, I'll have more details on that tomorrow.
Okay,
but in truth, you know, an employment agreement cannot block you from answering a legally issued subpoena.
Right.
Period.
All right. Well,
that's what may be at contention here as we come down to it.
Don't these subpoenas have to be served in person? In other words, what I'm thinking about, if she just stays out of sight until she walks into the room to sit down at the table to be questioned or however this is going to work, is that a positive? I know it's very childish. Sounds like something Glenn Beck would do. But is that something that Sibel is considering just to avoid the process server, the subpoena server?
No, as a matter of fact, I don't believe... If I understand the process, she would not be served. She's already been served. She's already been subpoenaed. What would happen here is the DOJ would issue a proclamation of state secrets privilege.
I see.
They would
take that
to the judge.
Right.
And from the judge, they would get a gag order to disallow Edmonds from speaking at this deposition.
Well, this is, I don't know. I think you agree, I think I agree with you that Sibel Edmonds has the potential to bust the entire 9/11 thing wide open, no matter how that busting open would fall. The 9/11 truthers believe way over here this point of view. People in the middle believe this point of view. People who are a little bit hesitant to accept government involvement believe this. So you've got a whole spectrum of people who simply, as I do not, accept the official story. The 9/11 Commission report is garbage. It's just all nonsense. The Bush-Cheney team insisting they not be under oath and yada, yada, yada. I mean, there's so much here. So it seems like every time Sibel Edmonds gets close, they jump in and stop her.
Well, I think what they've got, what I know that she's got, is a whole lot of dirt on a whole bunch of really, really dirty players, whether they're in Congress or in the State Department or the Defense Department.
Mm-hmm.
If she's allowed to talk about it, and if the media and or anybody else, Justice Department, decides to give a damn, there's going to be a whole hell of a lot of people in trouble. One other point that could put the kibosh on this entire testimony, set currently for Saturday, this coming Saturday, 10:30 a.m., I think, in Washington, D.C., Gene Schmidt is likely facing a lot of pressure right now. This is not going to work out so well for her friends in Congress if Sibel is allowed to testify. Don't be surprised if Congresswoman Schmidt suddenly decides she would not like to pursue this case after
all right.
Now on Saturday.
All right, Brad, listen, thank you. I just got an email from Reg over at TV News Lies. Google is blocking Sibel from updating her website, the 123realchange.blogspot.com. She put up a post. Her last post was yesterday. This is posted to a Democratic Underground today. My site is now blocked by Google's blogger. They will not let me post during this most sensitive period when I'm about to provide deposition on foreign U.S. government illegal operations in the United States. There's a little bit more here. I'll forward it to you right now. Hey, listen, thanks, Brad.
Always my pleasure, Mike.
All right, man. Let's talk the first of the week. Take care.
You got it.
All right. Bye-bye. Oh, my goodness. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Progressive Talk. It's Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour, and it is time once again for podcast trivia. Are we going to have some pretty music to introduce? Once again, podcast trivia, where you can win a free 1 year, commercial-free download of the Molloy program. Download it to your iPod, your telephone, your electric ballpoint pen, or your eyeglasses. Just however you want to do it, but it is free. Robin is in Portland, Oregon. Hi, Robin.
Hey, Mike, how's it going?
It's going just exceedingly well. Sometimes I get nervous when things go this well, but anyway.
Yeah, the phones aren't giving you any hell tonight, huh?
No, they're not. Oddly enough, I think Kathy and the other engineer got that fixed. Okay, are you ready for your question? And your these are all multiple choice. You'll have four choices for your answer. Are you ready?
Absolutely, and I'm playing for my little brother. I need to educate him and his wife.
All right, well, let's hope you win. In 2006, controversy arose over this infamous Cheney shooting incident. A, he shot his friend in the face while quail hunting. B, he shot the bird at Senator Leahy. C, he shot a deer on the White House lawn. D, he shot W in the butt while aiming at a quail.
He's probably guilty of all four, but the one that hit the press was A.
A, you're absolutely right. Way to go, Robin. All right. Yes.
A couple of suggestions I heard. I've heard a lot of people calling today, different programs and whatnot, saying, oh, what are we going to do? How can we help out our Congress people and whatnot
right.
with these idiots? Someone called Tom today and suggested stopping by a Goodwill store and picking up a whole bunch of brown shirts.
Yeah,
one of these idiots stands up, throw them on, and say, here's your uniform.
Yeah, well, one of our listeners, Kate T, suggested that last night. I think somebody heard that and then called and called Hartman's program. So I think it's a great idea. I think it's a great idea. All right, Robin, thanks, man. I'm going to put you on hold, and Kathy's going to get the pertinent information, okay?
All right. I hope you like the fish.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Yes, it's me.
That Robin. All right, Robin, hold on a minute.
Okay.
All right. This is from Bart Kopp. Mike sent this to me. If you have not gone to Bart Kopp, B-A-R-T, Kopp, C-O-P, BartKopp.com, shame on you. I've been talking about Bart Kopp for 5, 6, 7 years. It's one of the premier websites. Bart does some amazing things. You need to go. BartKopp.com. I stop there every day. Okay, not every day. I stop there 3 days out of 5. Usually at the end of the show when I'm trying to unwind, glass of wine and Bart Kopp, and within half an hour I've calmed way down. So go to BartKopp.com. Anyway, Mike just sent this to me. The subject was how to combat these astroturfers at the town hall meetings, these screwballs, these psychopaths. The letter that came in said, hey, Bart, I was over on Democratic Underground, and we came up with a whole slew of ideas for combating the turfers. In addition to turfer parrot bingo, here are some others that I came up with. Respond to their screaming by handing them a cheap prop, a baby bottle, for instance, or a dunce cap. Respond to their screaming by starting a chant like, USA! USA! Chanting this in response to their jeering will confuse the hell out of them. Whenever one of them gets up to scream, take their picture. In this instance, a video camera won't work. Taking their picture makes them think, ID! They will stop rising if they believe their photos are being collected. If anyone of real authority asks, tell them you're making a documentary that will air on Al Gore's current TV. Be sure the photographer wears an official-looking badge. Mock them. Stoop to their level, but have fun while doing it. Whatever they say, repeat it back to them in a whiny voice and make sure all your friends laugh and laugh, just like you used to do to piss off an older brother or sister. And just as they're about to blow their tops, tell them, I know you are, but what am I? It'll bring down the house, especially if you can do a good Pee Wee Herman imitation. And last, respond to their screaming by playing music. I suggest either the theme from Benny Hill or the chicken dance song. If you play the chicken dance, make sure Everyone dances and claps their hands too. Enjoy, JJ. I like it. I like the part with the cameras. I like the part with starting a chant. USA! USA! Wouldn't that freak them out? Oh my God! That's the thing to do. That beats the hell out of my suggestion, my thinly veiled suggestion of, well, if I'm ever at one of those events and somebody starts this, I know what I would do. Oh, please. Yeah, I know what I'd do now. I'm going to start shouting USA, USA, USA. Oh, my God. This is August 6th. We are now at the 64th anniversary of the bombing, the atomic bombing of the Japanese city of Hiroshima. The bombing of Hiroshima, and 3 days later, Nagasaki killed 260,000 people. Whew, just like that. The mayor of that city, Hiroshima, Mayor Tadatoshi Akiba, made an appeal today at a memorial service for the victims, calling for the abolition of nuclear weapons. The mayor praised U.S. President Barack Obama for his anti-nuclear views. He noted that Mr. Obama said in an April speech in the Czech Republic that the U.S. has a, quote, moral responsibility to act, end quote, since it is the only nuclear power to have used a nuclear weapon. The mayor also issued a peace declaration in which he described the suffering resulting from the Hiroshima bombing as, quote, a hell no words can convey, end quote. He says radiation absorbed more than 60 years ago is still having an impact on victims. The death toll from the Hiroshima attack has reached nearly 260,000, with thousands of victims dying of the effects of the blast in the succeeding years. 3 days after Hiroshima, Nagasaki, which killed 70,000 people all at once, mostly, believe it or not, women and children, and Japan surrendered 6 days later. Meanwhile, a national poll released by the U.S. Quinnipiac University on Tuesday indicates a majority of Americans believe that dropping atomic bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki was the right thing to do. Researchers say 61% of those polled said they supported the bombings. Of course, very few of those people were alive back then. About 22% said they opposed the move. The researchers say their findings are based on a survey of about 2,400 registered voters nationwide. I'm not surprised. The reason 61% say, yeah, that was a good thing to do, kill them goddamn Japs, is because they don't understand the history. They have no idea. They have bought into the revisionist history that the nuclear bombing was necessary in order to prevent the deaths of a million American soldiers that were going to invade by land. No, they weren't. The Japanese had already signaled that they were really ready to surrender. And what kind of pushed him into it was the fact that Russia declared war on Japan, hadn't up until right at the very end, and the Japanese were terrified of what would happen with the Soviet Union getting involved. But signals had been sent that the Japanese were willing to surrender if the emperor were left alone. And there were some other provisions that could have been negotiated, but the Truman administration, egged on by General Curtis LeMay and other members of the military-industrial complex, desperately wanted this bombing. Most Americans, probably 95% of Americans, don't have a clue. No understanding whatsoever, but have instead bought into the revisionist history, in other words, the lies, that a million Americans were going to invade and the death toll would have been staggering. There was no plan to invade Japan at that point whatsoever. There might have been talk about it, but as far as a plan, no, it did not exist. But what's appalling to me, and it shouldn't be, because I know where I live now. I live in the fascist states of America. We are so close to this. We are so close. People like Glenn Beck and Rush Limbaugh and Michael Savage. Has Michael Savage been picking on any children lately, autistic children? Has he gone after the kids in wheelchairs? Is he like Limbaugh who went after Michael J. Fox because he has Parkinson's. Remember that piece of video with Limbaugh sitting there shaking? I mean, these people are just goddamn swine. Absolute swine. Limbaugh and Hannity and Beck and the rest of these people. Savage. I the list goes on and on and on. And yet, corporate America continues to let them be on the air. They're right there. And the real, garbage pit of all this is the Premier Radio Networks that puts four or five of these pigs on the air every single day without let up. And you know why? Because they make a lot of money doing it. You filthy sons of bitches. So, the Americans polled, 61%, who don't have a clue. I wonder, you know, I have to stop and think. Supposing we have invaded two countries with no provocation whatsoever, Afghanistan and Iraq. I mean, two countries here in the past 7-8 years. Supposing somebody in Pakistan drops a nuclear weapon on the United States as a result of... Before the hour, Reg sends me an email. Be sure to watch it. It's on this week. It's called, it's on HBO. You can go to HBO.com and get the information. It's a documentary that's on HBO this week, White Light, Black Rain. And it's about the bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. White Light, Black Rain. Go to HBO.com. And you'll find it. White Light, Black Rain. It's showing on several HBO channels this week. And I've seen this. If it's the one I think it is, Reg, I think I've seen it. Check it out. Right towards the end of that segment, I just kept right on talking when Kathy was signaling me to get out of the way because the break was coming. So, I apologize. I apologize. What I was talking about was 60% of Americans polled by U.S. Quinnipiac University yesterday or 2 days ago indicates the majority of Americans, 61%, say dropping the atomic bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki was the right thing to do. And it's on the one hand, it's astonishing to me that that's the result of the poll. 2,400 registered voters nationwide were polled. It's unbelievable to me. This is a violent goddamn country, you know. It always has been. I mean, that's not a revelation. This country was founded in extreme violence, genocide and racism, slavery, all kinds of stuff. But and Michael Moore tried to get into that in Bowling for Columbine, but this is a violent, violent society. The United States. The rest of the world understands that. And I think that's one of the reasons the rest of the world would like us to just go goddamn home and leave them alone. And that violence is part of our cultural genetic makeup. It really is. And it pops up in skinheads and neo-Nazis and Glenn Beck and Rush Limbaugh and these birthers and the teabaggers and the Republican Party and all these crazy sons of bitches on the right who absolutely refuse to let go of their violence. I think that's one of the reasons we have so much heart disease and brain tumors in this country. Probably has a lot to do with environment and the diet. But there's so many people in this country just being devoured by this violent genetic makeup that just permeates everything. Have you noticed that? Of course you have. I mean, these are not news flashes. I'll give you an example. Have you got the Glenn Beck piece handy there about Glenn Beck threatening to murder Michael Moore?
I'm thinking about killing Michael Moore. And I'm wondering if I could kill him myself or if I would need to hire somebody to do it. I think I could. I think he could be looking me in the eye, you know, and I could just be choking the life out. Is this wrong? I stopped wearing my What Would Jesus Band Do, and I've lost all sense of right and wrong now. I used to be able to say, yeah, I'd kill Michael Moore, and then I'd see the little band, What Would Jesus Do? And then I'd realize, oh, he wouldn't kill Michael Moore. At least it wouldn't choke him to death, and, you know. Well, I'm not sure.
Isn't that nice? And he wants to put poison in Nancy Pelosi's glass of wine. Oh, but this is just a joke, Mike. You don't take it seriously, do you? This guy is insane. He's a lunatic of the first order. God only knows what kind of drugs they have him on, so he doesn't run amok in his own studio and open fire. It's unbelievable. And I'll repeat it, what I said. Glenn Beck is a suicidal, ultimately a suicidal personality. And Glenn, if you ever do decide to do it, please do it on your TV show, not your radio program. All right. Just don't go out and kill other people, which is what you crazy sons of bitches usually do. You kill a whole bunch of other people and then you blow your own brains out. Don't do that, Glenn. If you insist on going down that path, if you really, really, really decide to kill yourself, don't take any other people with you. Please, Glenn. And do it on your television show. It'd be the best YouTube in the history of YouTube. Do you realize how many hits you'd get? This is a violent country. So, Hiroshima, Nagasaki, they don't exist anymore. They just don't exist. You know, I watched two newscasts tonight, and as much CNN as I caught as I went about my daily business, not a mention, not a single mention. It is commemorated in Japan, obviously, and around the planet, but not here. I did a Google search on the bombing anniversary. Articles turned up from, as far as I went, maybe 15 or 20 foreign news services. Not a single one that I found. I'm not saying they're not there, but not a single one that I found had its, excuse me, origins in the American press. Not one. Not a single one. I went through the New York Times and the CNN websites this evening before the program to see if there was anything there on either one. Not a thing. And why should there be? That was so long ago, 64 years ago. Who cares, right? Who cares? But ooh, did you hear? The North Koreans are developing a nuclear bomb. Oh my God, they may already have one. Oh no, oh no. That means, oh Lord. No, it couldn't mean that. No, it couldn't. We'll be back after the break. Welcome back. It's 7 past the hour on the Molloy program. All right, we're going to open up the phones now. If you would like to give us a holler, 877-996-6556. And don't forget to Saturday night, if you haven't already gotten a ticket, I don't know how the ticket sales are going at KPOJ AM 1090 in Seattle. But we have an absolute hoot planned for tomorrow night. Tom Hartman, Stephanie Miller, Bill Press, and Ron Reagan will be there. I will be there. We'll be the panel. And the moderator of the panel is the former Seattle Times chief political writer, David Postman. It starts at 6 o'clock, goes till 9 o'clock. The doors are open at 5, and we look forward to seeing you. There'll be some... I think they have autographs we're supposed to sign and stuff to sign. I'm not sure, but it's going to be these events always are a lot of fun. And if you do go there tomorrow night and some of these crazy people show up, I think the idea of chanting USA, 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 I think that would be a good one. That would be a good one. So if you haven't got your ticket yet, go to am1090seattle.com, am1090seattle.com, and grab one, and we'll see you tomorrow, Saturday night, not tomorrow night, Saturday night. This program tomorrow night will be a rebroadcast of the program we did Monday, which I believe was an interview with Brad Friedman. I'm not sure, but Kathy will take care of that tomorrow night while I am traveling. George in Alhambra, California, writes about the Fox News crazies. He writes, Mike, I've seen the clips of Dick Morris and John Bolton and the other crazies over at Fox criticizing the manner in which the journalists were freed in North Korea. Imagine the scenario that one of the girls was pregnant and North Korea was planning to perform an abortion. What would the reaction of the crazies be under that scenario? Would they not be saluting Bill Clinton for saving the life of an unborn child? Would saving the life of an unborn child trump everything else? Would it be okay to negotiate with terrorists if it meant saving the life of an unborn child? I can only imagine the frenzy. George. In Alhambra. Yeah. Well, of course, you know, the sickness in the society is so pervasive, so deep, so widespread. It goes from these chuckle-headed loons on talk radio and television all the way through their followers into people like members of the Bush crime family. John Bolton is certainly a member of the Bush crime family. Oh, my God. Dick Morris, who is the toe sucker. He's the one who would hire prostitutes so he could suck their feet. Not that there's anything wrong with that. It's just that, I don't know. I just, every time I see him, he's kind of like John Fund. That guy used to work at the Wall Street Journal. He's on television. He's the one that, didn't he try to have sex with his girlfriend's daughter or something? I mean, this whole clutch of these bastards are so sick, so degenerate, so inside out. It's really, really difficult to comment on all of them because it's just a never ending, torrent of slop from these people. So it's not surprising that Dick Morris and this freak Bolton would say anything that they could possibly come up with negative about the freeing of these two young women. Of course, it's a bad thing. What should have happened in Bolton's mind is we just say, okay, you have 5 minutes to free the women, and if you don't, we're going to nuke your country. That always works, doesn't it, John? You sick son of a bitch. I've said earlier tonight, I'm always appalled. I'm not. Not anymore. I really am not. I'm just surprised at the level of depravity that these right-wing media zombies are willing to take the country through their brain dead followers, their ghoulish zombie like followers. It's just astonishing. All these people are ripping their own country to pieces, just tearing it to shreds. All these morons that show up at the town hall meetings, screaming about they're going to come and kill my grandma. I mean, do you people, of course you don't listen to this program, but I wonder if who would it take to tell them? Would it take their preacher? No, their preacher agrees with you. Yeah, tear the goddamn country down so Jesus will come. There's no one to tell them. There's no one to tell them. I want to say it's pathetic to watch them destroy their own country, destroy their own society, destroy themselves. But that's kind of a useless statement, you know, that it's pathetic. Okay. So I just hope that of the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of Glenn Beck viewers and listeners, I hope of all you silly little twits, send me more emails. Oh, my God. Send more. More. Before we go to your calls, this is at secularhumanism.org. Incredibly, President George W. Bush told French President Jacques Chirac in early 2003 that Iraq must be invaded to thwart Gog and Magog, the Bible's satanic agents of the apocalypse. Really, this isn't a joke. The President of the United States, in a top-secret phone call to a major European ally, asked for French troops to join American soldiers in attacking Iraq as a mission from God. Now out of office, Chirac recounts that the American leader appealed to their so-called common faith, and that Bush told him, quote, Gog and Magog are at work in the Middle East. The biblical prophecies are being fulfilled. This confrontation is willed by God, who wants to use this conflict to erase his people's enemies before a new age begins, end quote. This bizarre episode occurred while the White House was assembling its so-called coalition of the willing to unleash the Iraq invasion. Chirac says he was boggled by Bush's call and, quote, wondered how someone could be so superficial and fanatical in their beliefs, end quote. After the 2003 call, the puzzled French leader didn't comply with Bush's request. Instead, his staff asked Thomas Romer, a theologian at the University of Lausanne, to analyze the word appeal, the weird appeal. Dr. Romer explained that the Old Testament book of Ezekiel contains two chapters in which God rages against Gog and Magog, sinister and mysterious forces menacing Israel. Jehovah vows to smite them savagely, to turn thee back and put hooks into thy jaws and slaughter them ruthlessly. In the New Testament, the mythical book of Revelation envisions Gog and Magog gathering nations for battle. Quote, and fire came down from God out of heaven and devoured them, end quote. In 2007, Dr. Romer recounted Bush's strange behavior in Lausanne University's review, Allez Savoir, a French-language Swiss newspaper, Le Matin Dimanche printed a sarcastic account titled, quote, When President George W. Bush saw the prophecies of the Bible coming to pass, unquote. France's La Liberté likewise spoofed it under the headline, quote, A small scoop on Bush, Chirac, God, Gog, and Magog, end quote. But other news media missed the amazing report. Subsequently, ex-President Chirac confirmed the nutty event in a long interview with French journalist Jean-Claude Maurice, who tells the tale in his new book, Si vous le répétez, je... I can't do that. If you repeat it, I will deny. Oddly, mainstream media are ignoring this alarming revelation, so to speak, that Bush may have been half-cracked when he started his Iraq war. My own paper, the Charleston Gazette in West Virginia, is the only U.S. newspaper to report it so far. Canada's Toronto Star recounted the story, calling it a stranger-than-fiction disclosure, which suggests that apocalyptic elliptic fervor may have held sway within the walls of the White House. Fortunately, online commentary sites are spreading the news, filling the press void. And this guy who wrote this, James Haught, is the editor of the Charleston Gazette in West Virginia and a senior editor at Free Inquiry website. More on this when we come back. This is just crazy. We knew that Bush said God talked to him, but he called Chirac? Okay, we'll be right back.
Just a person to avoid. You read again.
21 past the hour. I'm quoting this piece from James Haught, who is the editor of the Charleston Gazette in West Virginia and a Free Inquiry senior editor. And he wrote this piece, it was posted at secularhumanism.org, about this crazy goddamn Bush calling French President Jacques Chirac in 2003 and said that the French had to assist because God was working in the war in Iraq. My Lord. James Haught goes on, the French revelation jives with other known aspects of Bush's renowned evangelical certitude. For example, a few months after his phone call to Chirac, Bush attended a 2003 summit in Egypt. The Palestinian foreign minister later said Bush told him he was on a mission from God to defeat Iraq. At the time, the White House called this claim absurd. Recently, GQ magazine revealed that former Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld attached warlike Bible verses in Iraq battle photos to war reports he hand-delivered to Bush. One declared, quote, put on the full armor of God so that when the day of evil comes, you may be able to stand your ground, end quote. It is awkward to say openly, but now departed President Bush is a religious crackpot, an ex-drunk of small intellect who got saved. He never should have been entrusted with the power to start wars. For 6 years, Americans really haven't known why he launched the unnecessary Iraq attack. Official pretext turned out to be baseless. Iraq had no weapons of mass destruction, after all, and wasn't in league with terrorists, as the White House alleged. Collapse of his asserted reasons led to speculation by hidden motives. Was the invasion loosed to gain control of Iraq's oil, or to protect Israel, or to complete Bush's father's vendetta against Saddam Hussein? Nobody ever found an answer. Now, added to the other suspicions, comes the goofy possibility that abstruse, supernatural, idiotic, laughable Bible prophecies were a factor. This casts an ominous pall over the needless war that has killed more than 4,000 young Americans and cost U.S. taxpayers perhaps $1 trillion. Yeah. Prez is in Santa Rosa. Listening.
Hi, Mike.
Green 960. Hey, Prez.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I really appreciate it.
Sure, sure.
You guys are doing a great job. I really miss having you on 3 hours a day when I can not have to go to bed early like I do lately. But anyway.
Well, we're on 4 hours in San Francisco.
I know you are, but I mean,
I know what
you mean.
I would
like to be able to listen to the whole show, but maybe I can. That's right. I can listen to almost the whole show, just the last hour in front of the first two.
There you go.
That's just fine.
Okay.
I wanted to mention two things, but you brought me back to the reason I tried to get through the other night.
Mm-hmm.
When you were talking about these religious people.
Right.
The manipulation.
Right.
I just wanted to say two things really quick, reasons I gave Kathy I was going to call. Number one, Medicare for all, period.
Right.
That's the whole solution right there. That's it. Hartman stole it from me. And also, I want to say that we're being defrauded and a fraud is being perpetrated upon us by Obama and his advisors. This financial thing, we're creating another bubble with our money that's going to be robbed again. But I mainly want to talk about these religious people.
Okay.
Get your religion out of my government. It has nothing to do with government whatsoever. And here's what I think the basic thing problem is with these people, Mike.
Okay.
They're cowards.
Oh, yeah.
You said before, they're completely fearful. They're like little babies.
Mm-hmm.
They're afraid. That's why they react so strongly. It's a visceral, emotional quagmire they're coming out of to quote Frank Zappa.
Yeah.
I've been listening to a lot lately for some reason. But anyway, and they're cowards, and they're also, they have a death wish. I really think they're really pained to be alive, Mike. I really think that they want everybody to die. That's why they gleefully watch other people suffer and go down, because they feel, now you're down in the pit where I am.
You know, I agree. I'm not a psychologist, but I've taken enough courses at university to understand. I took a couple of courses in abnormal psychology.
Mm-hmm.
Just for the hell of it, I have a copy, an old copy of the DSM-3 here at the house.
Mm-hmm.
that lists all the conditions under which somebody can be diagnosed as being insane. And you're right. I don't know how to complete the sentence, you know, because I've said it so many times. We live in weird times, Prez. That's all. We live in weird times. You just keep your sanity and I'll keep mine, all right?
Oh, yeah. They're going to come out with a DSM-5. And for one thing, they're expanding finally the definition of PTSD, which is good. You know, I'm a nurse, and I work for a government agency, and that's mm-hmm. one reason I'm really on top of this healthcare stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And you see what's happening. A lot of people are leaving their private insurers and coming to government agencies because they can't afford it anymore.
That's right. That's right.
And they're finding out it's the best health care in the world.
That's why the Obama plan better have a public option available, or there's, I don't know.
Here's what's going to happen, I'm afraid.
Quickly.
A public option, and then what they're going to do is, and the time that it takes for it to become operational, the lag time for the legislation, the insurance companies are going to decrease their rates.
Well, okay.
They're going to make it more attractive, and they're going to kill us, Mike. They're going to kill us.
Well, we'll still get the public option. If I can believe Barack Obama, and I better be able to believe him on this. Hey, Prez, thanks, man. I appreciate you giving us a holler. Coming up after this next break, podcast trivia. So if you're on hold, you get to play. All right? Podcast trivia, where you can win a free one-year subscription to Molloy Downloads, commercial-free podcast downloads. Stay with us. Gentlemen, another chance this evening to win a free one-year subscription to Molloy Program free, commercial-free podcasts. All you have to do is answer the question that we will be asking you, or I should say I will be asking you. And if you get it right, you win. All right, where are the questions? Oh, here they are. All right, let's start with Bjorn, who is calling from Asheville, North Carolina. Hey, Bjorn.
Hey, Mike, what's up?
You are.
This is like being on the Jack Parr show. I'm so excited.
It is. I know
can't
it is.
Wait to play tonight, man.
Very close to that. All right, here we go. Let me give you your question. You'll have four possible answers. Cheney explains his lack of military service during the Vietnam conflict by claiming he had other priorities in the 60s. How many draft deferments did he receive? Was it A, 1, B, 3, C, 5, or D, 7?
Oh, heavens to Betsy, let's go with the magic number 5 tonight, shall we, Mike?
5? 5?
5, 5, 5, yes.
you absolutely win, Bjorn.
Oh, Mike, that's, well, I'm so excited. I'm kicking myself with sheer excitement.
Oh, well, is it that easy to get folks in Asheville? Well, I've been to Asheville. A big night is when somebody goes to the library and checks out the book, right?
That's right. Not only that. I mean, a big night's watching the local cop arrest the local drunk. You kidding me?
I hear you. All right, Bjorn, I'm going to put you on hold. Thanks, man. I appreciate you. Appreciate your playing, and congratulations on winning. Kathy will get the information for you before very long. Okay. And momentarily, Kathy will pick up and get the information for you. Yeah. I love playing that game. I just love it. Oh, my God. We love giving away. What is it? Oh, that's right. Podcasts. All right, back to, let me see, do I have anything else here? Kathy in Green Bay, Wisconsin, wrote in and says, so why is it that whenever we have a Republican president, we have a president with a mental problem? Didn't Tricky Dick talk to paintings? Kissinger reportedly had him under surveillance for odd behaviors. And, of course, Reagan was in the early stages of Alzheimer's, despite what anyone says. A neurologist I know diagnosed him correctly. After seeing him on television, it was noticeable. And now Bush, who talks about Gog and Magog. Kathy writes, makes you long for the time when the only problem you had with the Republican president was that he was thoroughly corrupt and threw up on foreign dignitaries, doesn't it? That would be Pappy Bush, right? Oh, my God. Well, that's, you know, Kathy's absolutely right. Every time we get a Republican president here lately, he's just a maniac, a nutcase, completely out of control. And I swear to God, if Limbaugh and Beck and Hannity and Savage and the rest of these pigs keep doing what they're doing, it's not just going to be Beck who is considering suicide, if he is, which I think he is. I think he's getting very close to it. It might be a copycat thing. Wouldn't that be great? I think it would. Of course, I'm, you know, crazy, right? Michael is in L.A. Michael, welcome to the program.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Okay, I just wanted to sound off on the, the recent Republican town hall hooliganism.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah. There were a bunch of events tonight that these punks showed up at.
Well, it's a showcase of their core values and character makeup.
I think so, yeah.
It's a behavior that extends way beyond the healthcare debate and illustrates why they have no business holding the reins of government in any capacity.
Ever.
And these outbursts also carry a direct message from the healthcare conglomerates to the electorate, a message of contempt for public officials,
sure,
consumer interests, and the financial stability of the country.
Mm-hmm.
Contempt that only puts their moral scruples into question with their own shareholders, policyholders, and business community as a whole. It's clear that these health insurance conglomerates are not in business for their health or yours, that they should spend more time servicing clients and less time threatening public officials. Officials that could not afford to buy off with lobbyists, litigation, or health insurance premium cash streams.
Hey, Michael, are you reading?
I just had one sentence here.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, it's not that America cannot afford public insurance, but rather it can no longer afford private health insurance by the interest of graft, embezzlement, billion-dollar bonuses, and an industry that is overextended, overleveraged, and cannot survive without endless premium increases and endless government underwriting, because they are now positioned to be too big to fall as a moral hazard, and the inevitable claim redemptions and policies that they can no longer write, they're the ones that we cannot afford, because they will say, you know, we cannot make good on our redemption claims when the time comes. So we need another bailout like the banks got, like the auto industry, like AIG insurance. You know, we are too big to fall. But in the meantime, they want all of the graft and bonuses. So the argument that we cannot afford it, that the government that cannot afford health insurance, public health insurance, is such a bald-faced lie. And I really think this one issue, is the make or break of America's future.
Well, I certainly don't disagree with you, Michael. I think you're absolutely right. The corruption in the so-called health insurance industry is just astonishing. It really is. Up against a wall with the bastards. Thanks, Michael. I appreciate you checking in. I do indeed. All right. Who's next? Jay is in Sacramento. Hey, Jay.
Hey, Mike. How you doing?
I'm all right.
Haven't talked to you since the election, and before that, I've been talking to you for about 5 years now. We go back a long way.
Yeah, we do.
And I'm going to get one of those podcast things anyway. You've been in the trenches so long. But anyway, I had to make two points. What I wanted to say about the Hiroshima bomb, my father was a lieutenant, a military police lieutenant in the military, and he guarded that before it was dropped. And from my understanding, it was dropped because they wanted to test it. It was during its development. He felt really bad about that. And the reason I say he was an African-American is because he was a lieutenant, very few back then, and they didn't even trust the other officers. Kind of ironic. But anyway, so he took that to the grave with him, and he felt really bad about it. And he made sure that he pointed that out to me.
Mm-hmm.
And, but anyway, not to lay on that. Well, you know, Mike, that's all I really had to say. Well, just one other thing is that the radical right out here, they're very desperate right now. They're want to draw us into some kind of Armageddon.
Yeah, they do.
And we can't let this happen. And we just have to hold our peace. And I think things will work out. And they usually always do, Mike. I mean, that's what, through my life, I'm about your age now, and things usually work out. It's been a long time coming. it's been about, what, 300 or 400 years all this has been going.
Well, Jay, I hope you're right, but we've never had at the throat of America a pack of vampires like we do now. You know, people like Beck, they don't give a goddamn if this country lives or dies. As a matter of fact, I think they would prefer to see it descend into chaos because they are wealthy, and 99.9% of them are white millionaires who have all their escape mechanisms ready. They don't care about what happens down here. As a matter of fact, it would be sport to them to see Americans turn on each other and start killing each other. I just got an email from, well, he or she didn't sign up. Mike, what do you think? Listen to this, Jay. Mike, when do you think the first town hall shooting will be? How many people will die? At this point, will the Republicans halt the travesty, or will they continue to say they have nothing to do with the mobs? You know, and that is so true. They're playing with fire, Jay. And, you know, when you say, well, we've always managed to pull through, I don't particularly agree with that, pal. We're here, but, you know, the Civil War cost 750,000 American dead. And that was a convulsion. How many blacks, how many Latinos, how many Native Americans have been absolutely butchered?
Well, Mike, if you look at it in relative terms and in retrospect, I mean, from that time to now, we've made progress. It's been slow, so it's going to take a little while to hopefully turn this thing around. I mean, you know, first African American president ever, you know, who would ever believe that? And, you know, just, you know, the youth was a lot for that, and the new generation, and they're going to keep coming. And, you know, as we pass on by, and that's one of the things, I'm not going to get, but, you know, the Bible said that Jesus said he will, make all this knowledge available to the, to babes, and they don't understand it, okay? They're way away from that. Okay, and they're serving mammon, which is, means money, if you get down to the root of the word.
Right. Well,
and
listen,
that's
yeah,
where their heart is at.
Okay, you Jay, know? You know, I hear you, and
I'm an optimistic person, Mike.
Well,
and you know,
and I appreciate that, and I hope you stay optimistic, because you know, the truth is, we're going to need optimistic people. Maybe you will counter and bring into balance my absolute pessimism right now. But anyway, Jay, I appreciate you checking in, pal. Don't be a stranger. All right, take care. Steve is in Austin, Texas, listening on XM. Hey, Steve.
Hi, Mike. How you doing tonight?
I'm all right. Listen, let me put you on hold now, okay?
Sure.
Because I got to go to a break. We'll do the break and come back and talk with Steve. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. It is 10 before the hour. She makes the sign of a teaspoon, he makes the sign of a wave. Thanks to our crew. Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf, Ben Birch, Bruce Enberg, Sharon Gordy, and our executive producer, Catherine Babe. Rebroadcast of our program tomorrow, and I'll see you Monday, Saturday night in Seattle. Be there. Go to am1090seattle.com if you haven't got a ticket yet. There's still some available. All right? Play that Glenn Beck thing one more time. This is Beck wanting to kill Michael Moore.
I'm thinking about killing Michael Moore.
Good.
And yeah. I'm wondering if I could kill him myself or if I would need to hire somebody to do it. I think I could. I think he could be looking me in the eye, you know, and I could just be choking the life out. Is this wrong? I stopped wearing my What Would Jesus Band Do, and I've lost all sense of right and wrong now. I used to be able to say, yeah, I'd kill Michael Moore, and then I'd see the little band, What Would Jesus Do? And then I'd realize, oh, he wouldn't kill Michael Moore. At least it wouldn't choke him to death, and, you know. Well, I'm not sure.
See, this is this sick son of a bitch, and to all you little dweezels out there who sent me all 40, well, I think it's up to 47 now. The emails today about your hero here, you little Nazi scumbags. He is a sick man. I should be demonstrating some compassion for this degenerate, but just isn't in me. Normally, I would, you know, kind of take note of him and move on, but he is way beyond taking note of and moving on, and he is suicidally inclined. And my statement remains, if, Glenn, you ever do decide to kill yourself, which I have a feeling you're going to, I really do, please do it on your television show.
He kind of lost it with me, I think. It was a few years ago when he said it only took him about a year to start hating the families of the 9/11 victims.
He's sick. He's a sick bastard.
And then the Katrina victims were scumbags.
Yeah.
And I mean, it was just, it's just been such a steady, unending flow of, you know, just the capper saying that Barack Obama's a Nazi racist who hates white people.
Yeah.
A deep-seated hatred of white people. I mean, it's just scary.
Glenn Beck.
Because he does incite, you know, people to go into town halls in Florida and hurt people.
Glenn Beck, like Rush, like Savage, like Hannity, like all of these swine, are paid big bucks to provide cover, to provide protection for the various industrial complexes in this country that are destroying us. The financial industry, the chemical industry, the Frankenfood industry, the military industrial complex, the insurance industry. That's what these people are paid to do. But Glenn Beck, out of all these monsters, out of all these zombies and vampires, Beck is the one who is going to do himself in. There's already several pools out there on the web right now as to when the big day will occur. I am probably not going to participate because it's a little bit too freaky for me. But you know it's going to happen. You know it is. And again, I just hope that Beck does not do what a lot of these sick sons of bitches do, and that is kill their family first or go out and randomly shoot people. And then turn the gun on themselves. Beck is capable of doing that. You can tell by just watching him on these YouTube videos. Listen to him. Listen to him when he says, I was wondering if I could kill him myself or if I need to hire somebody to do it. No, I think I could. I think he could be looking me in the eye, you know, and I could just be choking the life out of him. Is this wrong? That's a sick man, but I have no compassion for him. None whatsoever. It would be very interesting to see him step in front of a bus sometime in New York City, and not that I would wish that on him, but you know, right? So, Glenn, if you ever do decide to off yourself, once again, please don't take anyone with you. Just go ahead, do it. We understand. We do. Wasn't it Sartre who said the only, no, it wasn't Sartre, who was it, said the only real philosophical question a person has to answer every morning is whether or not to keep on living. Heavy, dude. But again, I'm asking you just in the interest of entertainment, which is what you folks over at Fox News provide, if you do it on your television show. Okay. Okay. Steve is in Austin, Texas. Hey, Steve.
Hi, how you doing tonight?
I'm all right.
I think perhaps the price of Beck's soul is terminal insanity.
I think so.
I think so. Anyway, regarding the health care nutcases, I live about half a mile from the store where Congressman Lloyd Doggett was attempting to hold his town hall meeting.
Uh-huh.
Unfortunately, I couldn't attend it because I had to work. But it was well covered by the local media. And I think, as echoed by another radio show I heard earlier today, the bigger problem is these people cannot handle a non-white person in the White House.
That's a big part of it. That's the reason to pretend like he doesn't have a proper birth certificate. They're trying to turn him into an invader, you know, the other, someone from a different place. Hey, listen, Steve, I got to leave it there, pal. I'm sorry. I realize we only had a few seconds on your call, but call back in and we'll do it again. I promise. All right, y'all behave yourselves. Watch out for these town hall meetings. And if you do go to one and these zombies start screaming, just start chanting USA, USA, USA. I'll see you Monday. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. Is the